Entertainment.ie.
I love the way you say film.
Hello and welcome to The Film Show. I'm your host, Owen Roné, and I'm joined, as always, by Brian Lloyd and Dee Malumbi. How are you guys?
Good.
Yes. Brian, you're wearing cowboy boots today.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get into that. Yeah, so I bought cowboy boots online. I'm wearing them as I record this. They're comfortable, but I feel like the socks I'm wearing are too thick.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like a thinner sock would be more appropriate.
Are they quite a
allow
coarse
the foot
sock?
To breathe.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, this is true. Because people don't know this, but Dee used to work as a shoe salesperson.
I did.
We were just talking about this off air. What was your weirdest foot day?
I don't know if I could think of that.
Have you ever seen like an ingrown toenail?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
and like oh, and like corns.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god! That's,
yeah.
Did you ever actually?
Oh,
like,
there was actually one particularly. I do remember this particular god lover. She was kind of old, I thought it was like baby powder on her feet, but it was like old dry skin. So that was a bit upsetting. And she had like yellow nails and a bunion. That was a
particularly service you're providing
thing.
At the end of the day, isn't it?
It was funny actually, the difference between I remember because for a while I worked in Dundrum and that was the first time I was selling men's shoes as well as women's shoes, and it's so funny the difference between if women go down a size, they're like, oh my gosh, really? They take it as a huge compliment. If men go down a size, they lose their shit. They're like, there's no fucking way. And like, they take it as like a reflection of their manliness.
I didn't know
that
it was possible to go down a size. I didn't know.
Well, our shoes were particularly big fitting, or at least that's what we tell them, because they get really, really upset.
If you accuse them of foot shrinkage.
No, you just say, oh, I think it's good if you try the next size down. And I swear to God, the number of shoes I sold that were too big for the customers just because they refused to go down a shoe size.
There's more room for my ego.
Exactly.
And penis.
This right? Good. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you got that out there. Yes, the penis size. That's bullshit though.
No,
that's
it's not. I'm telling you in this store.
No, I'm saying like as in like the foot size relative to the penis.
Oh yeah, that's bullshit.
That's bullshit.
Sorry, I thought you were accusing me of, you know.
No, trust me to have a take on this, Brian.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, to be fair, like, I mean, like, there was this study done and they basically measured like, no, this is true because we had it on site. It's one of the most popular articles on site.
I'm just picturing you fervently typing into Google.
Oh yeah. Like,
that and sexiest movies ever made.
Yeah.
Guys, people are gross.
People are gross.
Oh, yeah.
People
they always perform well.
Yeah, they always perform well. But
on entertainment.ie.
On entertainment.ie. That was written about like 4 or 5 years ago, and it's basically about the average girth of a penis.
Okay.
And then basically measured like 20,000 penises, and then they figured out what the average girth size was. Now I can't remember what the average girth size was, but
you're making a ring with your thumb.
I am. Like, I mean, I don't think it's that big.
Guys, we're gonna get cancelled if we keep talking about this.
I want to say it's
bigger than a tube of Smarties.
Yeah, bigger than a tube of Smarties for sure.
Smaller than a
smaller
poster.
Than a Toblerone. Like, Toblerone is like, I mean, I know that's a
prism.
That's
penis.
Big prism penis. Big fucking polygonic penis, like, coming right at you. Let's just move
we're
on.
We're still going? Okay.
We'll come back to it. We'll circle back. Yeah. If we can get a maximum girth guideline from you, Simile, that would be brilliant.
That would be fantastic.
Okay, we've got plenty of movie news.
Movie news.
Up first. Hashtag release the Snyder Cut.
Oh my god.
What's your take on this? So give us an old rundown of what's going on.
Okay.
Justice League.
Well, the reason why this is trending again, just to put it in context, is that over the weekend both Gal Gadot and Ben Affleck got on the whole release the Snyder Cut. But if you want to go into detail about the context, Brian, no, you go ahead, because you actually wrote an article about this on entertainment.ie just a few months ago detailing the whole saga and how this happened. And it's been going pretty much since just a few months after Justice League.
2 years,
2 to 3 years at this point.
You look fatigued, Brian.
I am fatigued. I am absolutely fatigued by this story. This is one of the most exhausting stories in the movie news realm of this past year. So, the story for context was that essentially Zack Snyder, whether he was fired, whether he left, who knows, but essentially he was taken off of, he left Justice League. Joss Whedon came in, completed the film. He refilmed something.
His daughter died.
Yeah,
I know his daughter died.
Tragedy,
there was a, no, to be fair, yes.
I mean, I'd understand why.
I did read, though, that there were rumors that potentially he was fired.
Correct.
Yeah, in the run-up. Like,
That is correct. Basically, the rumors are was that the film was basically unwatchable. He was still dealing with the death of his daughter, which is
awful.
Which is absolutely awful. And Warner Brothers said, look, leave, you can go, and we'll bring in Joss Whedon and he'll complete it. And he basically said, fine. Now, I would think myself, there's truth somewhere
in that. Are those things
that
mutual? Surely it's a...
Who knows? Now, I don't... Probably it's not that mutual if Zack Snyder is now basically waging this campaign.
He's sharing the hashtag. Is he saying, give me my...
Yeah, he's like, let me release my version of Justice.
Yeah, I mean, he basically retweeted Gal Gadot and Ben Affleck's tweets saying, well, if Wonder Woman and Batman are saying it, you know, so he's totally kind of adding fuel to the fire.
With whatever his contract probably was.
Yeah, he's egging it on, basically. He's egging it on. Yeah, and since then, there's been this fabled Snyder cut, that there was this work, there was essentially this work print cut of the film that Zack Snyder wanted to make. Some of the effects were unfinished. Some of it needed more money for it to be completed. Other scenes needed to be reshot, yada, yada, yada. But essentially there was this assembly cut. There you are. The assembly cut of the film made. And
presumably a bit more coherent and so on.
Way more coherent, apparently. Way more darker, way more kind of mythic and blah and yada, yada, yada. And who fucking
cares? You sound cynical.
I'm so cynical of it. I'm so fucking cynical.
Well, for ages, there was kind of the question of whether it actually existed. And the reason why we're talking about it again in recent months is that a few months ago, Zack Snyder said, oh, yeah, it does exist.
Right.
But it's up to Warner Brothers to release it. So now people are being like, Warner Brothers, release it.
Yeah, pressure's not going away.
Yeah, the pressure's not going away. Nope. There's two things about this. I think number one is the fact that the people who are really, 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 really pressing for the Snyder Cut thing are very, very clever about manipulating Twitter into getting these things trending. Like, you can actually basically engineer Twitter to have a trending topic.
Right.
By just like tweeting 5 to 10 different accounts and tweets at specific times. It's very, very easy to do, seemingly.
What?
Now, the last time the release of Snyder Cut trended, that's when I wrote that article. Mm-hmm. This time around, obviously because Ben Affleck and Gal Gadot have been hammered with people tweeting them to tweet this hashtag, that's why it's in the conversation again.
Again, though, they're under contract as well, I presume.
Yeah. Personally, myself, I don't... If, for nothing else, if it would shut these feckin' people up, release it. Just release it. Get it out there and be done with this, because it's fucking tiresome at this stage. However, I don't think Warner Brothers are going to bother their arses releasing this Snyder Cut. And I'll tell you why. It would essentially be an admission of guilt. It would be an admission of...
We did toy with this edit.
Yeah, we toyed with this edit. We didn't like it. We buried this. We fucked up, essentially. We were the ones who withheld Zack Snyder's directorial vision. And what will happen is that when other directors come in to work for Warner Brothers, they're going to say, well, you're not going to do to fucking Zack Snyder what you did to me. Yeah. I want Final Cut. I want this. I want that. I want the other.
I wouldn't be too worried about that because, and I know that it is a fairly different situation, but I'd almost like kind of respond to that by bringing up the whole James Gunn thing, because you were convinced.
I was convinced
that Disney and Marvel were never going to admit their guilt and reconcile and rehire James Gunn, and that did happen.
Yeah,
you know,
good point.
I mean, at the end of the day, what these studios care about, and DC and Warner Brothers are going to be as guilty of this as Disney and Marvel, is what makes more money. And that's exactly why they got James Gunn back, because they knew that everyone was going to go see James Gunn's version of Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and nobody really gave a damn about anybody else directing that movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Is it the same thing then as Sonic the Hedgehog, where we're entering a new era of mob justice
actually having an impact? Maybe.
It's not a bad thing.
It's on movies. It's not like it's on like it's some big political issue. You know?
Anarchy.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, like, if for nothing else, I'd just like these people to stop. I'd like to stop talking about Justice League.
Yeah, exactly. Because we've moved on. Yeah,
I am inclined to agree with you that it was a terrible movie. And is there some kind of golden edit out there?
I don't think so.
I'd love to give Snyder the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. I mean, I will
say, I've seen a lot of his film.
If it were to come out, I definitely check it out because I'm curious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there is an element of curiosity. But I mean, what I will say is that I watched the Ultimate Edition of Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, I still haven't seen that.
It's better than the one we all saw.
There you go. Yeah.
I'll say that, but not so much that I'm like, oh God, Zack Snyder was a undisputed genius.
How much longer was it?
It's like nearly 3 hours long. Like,
wow.
Yeah, and it's total. Like, I was watching, it was like, yeah, I can see why they cut this out. It didn't necessarily need it, but it adds context.
Sure.
But to say that, like, it absolutely changed my entire perspective on the film, absolutely did not. Was it a massively better film? Absolutely not. It was a slightly better film. But the fundamental flaws, the fundamental problems that were in Batman versus Superman were still there.
Yeah. Like,
you know, the idea behind it was still stupid. The idea behind Batman being this older character, but yet we never actually kind of get any context for that older character. The whole thing with like the white Portuguese and the whole thing about the smuggler, like Jesus, like that was all still there.
Remember how they bonded over both having the same Maz name?
Yeah.
That was so silly.
Awful.
Like, it was so silly.
So stupid. Like, so stupid. Like, that's what I'm saying. And that was still there. That was still there. That part of it was still there.
That was still the crux of it. Like, yeah.
So like it was still a fundamentally bad film. It was just, there was less kind of mitigating circumstances to make it bad.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And I think this is the same with Justice League. I don't think there is a radically different film to what we saw. I would say there is a marginally improved version of it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's enough to warrant Warner Brothers forking out however much it's going to cost to make that version of it. Like,
I'd also be curious about, does Warner Brothers just want to sweep this under the carpet? Because, I mean, what are the repercussions if, you know, it comes out and it's good and people really like it? Does that mean they have to kind of turn back on the Justice League machine and worry about?
Yeah. They're definitely looking ahead to the Batman anyway.
That's the thing, yeah.
Why, which is like different.
Yeah, exactly. And it's moving on to the next thing, you know, and they did really well off the back of Joker and everything, you know, so they're just ready to move on. And they're doing the Wonder Woman sequel and they're doing the Aquaman sequel, but they definitely don't want to, you know, dip back into the general Justice League pot again.
Maybe it's me just hoping, but I don't know if they'll ever. I mean, obviously, Wonder Woman, the sequel, is going to be a lot more palatable than something like Joker. It's not going to have this new heavily stylized thing or whatever. But it'd be great if they never did another MCU style film where they're just trying to get the Marvel books.
But very much so.
Yeah, for sure.
Very, very much so.
Last question, actually.
Yeah.
Do either ye have a most improved or most disimproved by a director cut, like alternative version?
Blade Runner. That's what I was thinking. I mean, that ending was
like the final cut is the only version of Blade Runner that you should watch, in my mind. I wouldn't even bother with the theatrical cut.
Yeah,
I just think, like, I mean, Blade Runner is one of the few examples of a film that actually improved every time the director came back and did something different with it. And I think the reason for that was the fact that, like, Ridley Scott understood that the film was pretty much exactly what he wanted. He just needed to make a few, like, little subtle changes to make it exactly how we wanted
it. Keep
the
same themes.
Yeah. Like, you can, like, I mean, you can watch the original version of it and you can watch the final cut, and they're pretty, I mean, other than the ending and the voiceover, they're more or less structurally the same film. Like, there's not a huge amount of difference between it. Like, but the final cut is just the best version possible of it. Like, so, like, why wouldn't you want to watch that? Like, and he even said it himself, out of all the versions, this is the one I'm most proud of. This is the one I want people to see. So if you're, you know, if you follow auteur theory, or if you follow that kind of idea of the director's vision,
listen to Ridley.
That's it. That's the one he wants. Like, that's
he's very
one.
Good for that kind of thing very, as well, isn't he? Where he's quite ruthless on himself.
Yeah, very much so. He's very, like I would really recommend, if you have any interest in just seeing how films are made in general, you should watch Dangerous Days. It's just like 3-hour documentary about the making of Blade Runner. And it really goes into...
I've never seen that. That's classic.
It is brilliant. It's like a 3-hour documentary. It delves into the production behind it, the lead up to it, how it was in
inspired other people, but also as well the fact that, like, when he put it out, the studio really didn't want it to, it didn't do well. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And his, he immediately says, okay, it, like, he made, he's this great line in it where he says, being ahead of its time is just as bad as being behind the times. And I, you know, and he said, look, I'm a worker, I want to work on this. If there's a problem, I want to fix it. And he went to the studio and said, okay, what do we do? How do we make this better?
Like, oh, so it wasn't just the classic auteur going like,
oh, no, fuck you. Yeah, no, 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 not at all. He was very aware of like, okay, I understand there are problems with this film. How can we make
this
better?
That's kind of what I meant. That's what I like about Ridley Scott. He wants to be a crowd pleaser as well. Yeah. Like,
he has a vision and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, he's aware of, look, this is a business.
Yeah, he's very good with budgets and stuff.
Yeah,
like
very
that.
Good with budgets. Like, he knows how to bring stuff in. And like Blade Runner, for all his... for all the stuff of like, oh, it was him going crazy and all the kind of stuff. When you watch that documentary, you can see his line of thinking. Like, you can see where he's thinking. And they bring in the producers as well, Bud Yorkin and all them. And they're all like, look, you know, we paid it this amount of money. We bought this film. We wanted him to make it in this amount of money. The it's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen about the production of a film, any film.
There you go.
So it's really worth, definitely worth the watch.
I'd also actually just add to that, Ridley Scott's extended cut of Alien is also excellent.
No way.
And I think better than the original. And another one, the extended version of Terminator 2, which includes the alternate ending, which has
Don't.
Have you not seen it? The one with Sarah Connor sitting on the bench like an old lady. See, this is so weird because our editor at entertainment.ie, Dave O'Shaughnessy, sent us around that alternate ending to Terminator 2. And I'm like, this is old. Like, this has been around
everyone
for years.
It, yeah.
This is the first, like, the first time I saw Terminator 2 was actually the extended version, which I think, James Cameron did work on and everything. And when I saw the original, I was like, this is way better, especially with that ending. Because, I mean, I think so. Because in the original Terminator 2, ending on that road with the voiceover, I don't know, it's something like an anticlimax to me, whereas I think that the emotion attached to like seeing her old and seeing that Judgment Day didn't happen
that
and that
passed,
the kids are like playing in the playground and everything. I think there's something like
that scene.
Especially with all the build up to it, because
is
again
that
in the
that's not canon for the new film and so on.
Because
they didn't avert Judgment Day.
Yeah, exactly.
You fairly need it.
But I mean, and the fact that you have like a few more scenes building up to that, you also incorporate your man from the first Terminator.
Oh, Kyle Reese, Michael Biehn.
Yeah, yeah. So he's in the extended version as well, just like for a scene. But again, it's just that bit more kind of poignant and everything.
Yeah, yeah. That scene is lovely with him, him and her. It's beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
It's basically he comes to her in a vision, like, and she's all like, oh, it's beautiful. Like, I remember seeing that scene. It was like, God, it could have really done with leaving that in.
Yeah.
You know, it could have given her that edge of vulnerability, I guess.
And just tying it back to the first one, you know. And the fact that, like, he did give such a phenomenal performance.
Yeah.
You think you'd include his one scene for Beck's sake,
sounds like a beautiful scene about a lad's mate who goes back in time to ride his man, then becomes his da.
There you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Can you go back in time and protect my ma?
And then don't ride her, whatever you do. Don't ride my mother.
I'm your dad now. And always have been as part of a time paradox. So we're going to move on. We got Disney's slate has been, up to 2023?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at the later stuff for, like, 2021 to 23, a lot of it is untitled Marvel, untitled Pixar animation, untitled Disney live action, untitled Fox. So, you know, not anything there to get super psyched about, although you do have Avatar 3 in 2023, you have Black Panther 2 to look forward to in 2022. There are a few titles there, but just the stuff that's kind of coming up in 2020 includes Onward. So we've seen a bit of that already, the Disney Pixar movie, also Soul. So it's quite unusual for Disney Pixar to have two movies out in the 1 year, but this is again just showing like the machine that Disney has become.
Yeah. Plus, they're being very careful to make only original IPs now or whatever.
Yeah,
exactly.
Ones that they, yeah.
Soul looks good.
Yeah, it does actually. I have to say, I like the look of it. Yeah, it looks interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That whole idea that, like, you know, the little souls are talking, it's very Inside Out.
Yes.
But I mean, that's exactly what I'm, work for.
Yeah.
Yeah. A few others to look forward to: live action movie Jungle Cruise. So we've seen the trailer for that one already. Live action remake of Mulan, which I'm still a little
What's the date for that?
That is March 2020. Okay. So that's pretty soon. Black Widow also sooner than I expected, May 2020. As I'm reading all of these, I have to keep on bearing in mind that, you know how Americans put the month and then the date?
Yeah, they do.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Why do they do that?
Crafty jokes, aren't they?
A couple, why do they do that? It's weird, yeah.
I think it's to stand out from their oppressors.
Fucking Americans, like.
And then a
That's why they drive on the right. Just and, contrary.
Then a few that have been delayed. So Artemis Fowl, we were meant to get this year. Also the New Mutants there. Finally, apparently, coming out in 2020. Death on the Nile as well, the sequel whatchamacallit, Murder on the Orient Express. I'm not sure why they're making that. But
I really hope they keep that lid. I really was so excited for the Poirot reboot. What? Yeah, keep it coming.
Have you seen it, though?
Yeah.
I like it. I didn't think it was great.
No, but I love Poirot.
I know, me too. But, like, I mean, he's not, like, I mean, look, like, it's no David Suchet. Like, it's not the classic one. You know what I mean?
Hastings. No, I can't do it. Whatever.
Oui, monsieur.
However, mon cher, there appears to be. No, I can't do it.
That's really good, though.
No, I'm just saying French in my accent.
Mon chéri.
Also, this time next year, so this will be Christmas 2020, we have West Side Story. So that's going to be a biggie. Doctor Strange sequel in 2021. Cruella in the Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, that's never going to happen.
It's in there for 2021. It's there.
It's going to be there. It's in production.
July. So they're hoping for, you know, that summer box office.
Is that Harrison? Or is that a full? No.
He's going to be 70, late 70s.
I wouldn't mind if that wasn't exactly the plot of Crystal Skull. Was like, look,
elderly,
back.
Yeah, elderly Indiana Jones. And now we've got Shia LaBeouf.
He's going to have like a crutch in this one.
Yeah. And the fact that he was like, I mean, in the last.
The skeleton of Harrison Ford will appear.
Harrison Ford, skeleton in Indiana Jones. I don't know. It's just a shame that like Shia LaBeouf was so crap in that film that like they couldn't hand it off. Like, I mean, they couldn't hand it off to him at that stage because he was that bad about it.
He couldn't become the new lead or whatever. Was he bad on set?
He was just bad in general. Oh. Like, you ever seen that film?
Yeah.
It's terrible. Like,
hey, Pops.
Oh, it's just so bad. Like,
I'd watch that. I can't wait for that now. Even Crystal Skull is good when it's good.
But it's good. It's
on
very
the university
good.
Campus or whatever.
Yeah. And like, what's her face as well? Cate Blanchett, like, as Elena Valco.
Oh, God. No, actually, I took it all back. Oh, the bit where they're chasing
the
through
monkeys,
the vines.
The fucking monkeys. Oh.
John Hurt's good in it, though.
And Karen Allen, like, great to see Karen Allen back in action. Like, fantastic. Like, man, Marion Ravenwood back in the day, very formative, like, you know, here holy shit. But, like, no, but, like, it's just, yeah, I know, sorry, I have to bring it up every time. But, I don't
every
know.
Every time Brian says formative, I just cringe because it's always about some, like, actress who's now kind of pushing it.
Yeah. Know? What he's saying is that it influenced his sensual tastes.
Yes.
That's more gross.
That's even more gross. It is so very sexual.
This is how I developed my proclivity.
The mustache doesn't help.
It does neither. No. I can just twist it now. Like,
Though in fairness, you're still pulling it off, and the soul patch. There you go.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. We actually are. I'm going to put my soul patch up as the Oscar forfeit this year.
Oh,
I will shave everything up and just.
You're going to say up for auction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll put it up
like
for auction.
Wants that.
Yeah. No
this,
one wants
I
it.
Floated this. This is the film show forfeit.
The film show forfeit. Which for the Oscars.
My hands are so sweaty.
Well, I've got one for you, though. No. I have one for you.
You're not allowed to go near my hair as I.
No, because you're getting married and stuff. So, we can't do that. But maybe a tattoo or something. Yeah, I think that might be it.
I don't know. Why?
What do you mean, why?
Don't
like
announce
mine
on air.
A tattoo is permanent.
I won't be able to cancel it.
Okay, well, we'll figure it. But, like, you can get tattoo removal stuff. Like, that's easy.
That's supposed to be really painful.
That's not. It's not really. Like, all it is just like it's just like dying the skin. Like, you basically.
Just get me to eat something weird, okay?
Wait, rewind. is tattoo removal just drawing over tattoos with skin colored ink?
My understanding of it is that
because if not, I'm inventing that.
It's basically look at you writing this down. Skin colored
sheep,
ink.
Like he... skin mod.
It's kind of, if my understanding of it is with tattoo removal, that it basically breaks down the skin cells, and then that's absorbed by the body. You basically poop out your tattoo.
Your ink.
Yeah. You poop it out. Because then the body breaks it down, and then it becomes...
Are the cells unaffected?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I've looked into it. I have a tattoo. I've thought about getting it removed. So,
can you tell us what's on it?
Yeah, it's my mother's name written in Hebrew, and I got it done, and I was like, I'm not really sure if I want this anymore. And then I'm too superstitious, because it was like...
More questions than answers.
Yeah, but like, I was going to get it covered over, and then I was like, no, I'm really superstitious, and I was like, then I could get it removed, and I'm like, no, I'm too super... And like, I'm not, just, it's one of those weird things, because it's somebody, like, it's, you know, that kind of way, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway. You should look into some cheap skin colored...
I don't know.
Or invest in Owen's new enterprise.
Yeah, sheepskin mod.
Couple of G's up front,
and then we're good to go. then we can ditch these fools, and it's, and we're living the high life.
Jump cut to going out of business sale. Skin Ink. All right,
you need a better name than Skin Ink. That's, come on, like
skink. Yeah.
Oh yeah, skink. That's good.
Get the word cheap in there, because it needs to be known as a cheap alternative to tattoo removal.
So. Cheap skink.
Cheap skink.
Like cheap skate, cheap skink.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
For when you want to fix your body but don't have a lot of money. And this laser is laser.
I tell you, this podcast ad copy writing itself. I can imagine Marc Maron selling this for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Plus, I'm actually the one benefiting from it. I could start doing ads for skink midway through.
Yeah.
Sorry, cheap skink.
Cheap skink. True, this show. Yeah, we can just like throw in an ad for cheap skink.
It's a good podcast.
It's a great podcast.
Movie reviews. There you have it, folks. Up first, we're reviewing. We've got Frozen 2 later,
yeah,
which is going to be massive. But first up, we've got 21 Bridges. Did you know the director, Brian Kirk, is from Armagh?
That's right.
Aardvarka. There you are.
Yeah, I did know that. And he directed like a load of episodes of Game of Thrones. He's like really well known in the TV realm. I think this is like, I don't know if this is his feature debut, but it's...
Is it? Well, do you know what? The name came up previously because he did My Boy Jack for BBC, I think, which was feature length. And I thought it was brilliant. It was about the life of Rudyard Kipling.
Is that with them? Oh, no.
Daniel Radcliffe. What's his name? David, yeah. Is it Haig or something? You know, the baldy guy.
Yeah, who was in The Thin Blue Line.
He looks like James Connolly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And his son is Daniel Radcliffe.
Interesting.
He goes off to war, and it's all about how Kipling was the big patriot and sent his son off to the trenches, and he died.
Wow.
And they never found him or anything.
Jesus.
Spoiler.
Yeah, well, that would make it, yeah. But yeah, 21 Bridges. No, this was actually really interesting because, you know, like, they're selling it as like, oh, it's from the producer. It's the producers, Anthony and Joel Russo, the guys who did Avengers Endgame and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
There is nothing in this film whatsoever that would make you associate it with Avengers Endgame.
Except for the casting of Chadwick
Boseman. Yeah. That's basically it. And the fact that Anthony and Joel Russo are involved.
Is he good in it?
Yeah, he's good in it. Like, I mean, you can see he's really trying to like Denzel it up by like being really intense and like walking through cop scenes, and he's like, you know, like, we got this 21 bridges into this town, close them all, and like he it's all laid out very, very procedurally, because it is essentially a police procedural thing. These two criminals, one of them is played by Taylor Kitsch, the other is played by Stefan James, who people would know from If Beale Street Could Talk.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I love that movie.
I think Taylor Kitsch fan as well.
Yeah, Taylor Kitsch, yeah. He
was True Detective, wasn't he?
Yes.
Is that who I'm thinking? Yeah.
Yeah, and he was in John Carter, which I feel is one of the most underrated films ever made. But
as is If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yes. Very much so. Very, very much so. So anyways, the two of them are these basically like kind of ex-military, but now are criminals. And they rob this restaurant that is holding this stash of drugs. And when they're originally told, oh, it's only like 300 keys or something like that. I forgot the figure. But when they get there, it's an entire safe full of drugs.
Wow.
And just as they're robbing it, a load of cops turn up and they're all like, oh God, we're after tripping the alarm. And little by little, they realize, wait a second, we didn't trip any alarm.
The cops are there.
The cops were there coming one way or the other. So how is it that they knew we were there? And so there's a gunfight, the cops are killed. And then Chadwick Boseman's police officer, whose father was killed 20 years ago, and now he's known as like this avenger of dead cops. He's like the guy who
another association with Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like the opening scene is his Bible quote, and it's like, I am not an avenger come to whatever. I forget the line. But it's basically like, it's very like,
so he actually uses the word avenger.
Once.
See, there is another Marvel association. But it's
so peripheral. It's so like little.
Nah, those things are always on purpose. I'm telling you.
Well, maybe.
I am an Avenger. That is a ridiculous phrase.
It was very like, oh, Avenger. Oh, yeah. And I was like, they probably put that in just so they could have that in the trailer. Exactly. And sure enough, it is in the trailer.
Of course.
Right. But this is like, it's very old school cop thriller. Like it is like, I would totally imagine if this was made, you know, in the 80s, you would have had, I don't know, like Mel Gibson or something. Not even Mel Gibson. You would have had somebody like, I don't know, Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
Playing.
How does it fare up to something like, I don't know, like The Departed?
Oh, no. It's not a whodunit necessarily. It's more sort of like, we've got 24 hours to get out of the city. Like
Is it like The Town? Or
kind of like The Town. Not as kind of like jittery and kind of heisty as The Town.
What's the Clive Owen one I'm thinking of? Man on the Inside.
Inside Man. Inside Man is more Agatha Christie, I would argue.
Yeah.
Like, it's very like intrigue. How are they gonna get out of it?
Yeah, and all the pieces kind of come together at the end.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas
by the way, that is one of my favorite types of things where they replay a scene but zoom in on the briefcase and
you
like,
didn't see it the entire time.
Just the Ocean's 11.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. Yeah, those great like little like
that's quite cheeky. Yeah.
You took all my money. And then it's like, how did he do it? But no, 21 Bridges is more, I would say it's basically like if you imagine Assault on Precinct 13 but on a way bigger scale. It's the idea of like, they've got to get out of the city. How are they going to do it? And like, there are cops everywhere, so it's them running from the cops. And as this is happening, Chadwick Boseman is trying to kind of uncover, okay, let's actually go back to the start. What actually happened here? Why is it that I was hired for this? Because they know that I hate cop killers.
Okay.
And then he's like, well, wait a second. Why was there a shootout in the first place? What was actually in here? Oh, it was drugs. Well, why were the cops there in the first place? Oh, they were responding to it. Were they? No, they weren't. So it's very, like, you can very much see the wheels moving the entire time.
Is it a corruption thing?
Of course it's a corruption thing.
On the inside of the police. How phenomenal.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's very, like, the entire time I was watching, I was like, I know exactly what's happening here. I know exactly how this is. By the numbers. Very, very by the numbers. But that didn't bother me necessarily.
Something like that would still really appeal to me.
Very much so. Like, it was very well done. Like, it was
I'd watch it on TV.
Yeah, you might. Yeah. You might. Yeah. You might. Like, I would say it's kind of counter-programming to Frozen 2. It's like, okay, drop the kids off of Frozen 2 and you can go see this. And it's a very...
The poor moms. The dads are
going to... Or dads, or whomever.
The dads are off counting bridges.
Yeah. 21 of them. Oh, it's great.
Where is it? Is it Manhattan?
In Manhattan, yeah. It's 21 bridges in and out of Manhattan, yeah.
Can you name them?
Oh, God, no. I mean, you should know. You're a New Yorker.
One of them is Brooklyn Bridge.
I'm joking.
One of them is the Battery Park Bridge. One of them is the Queensboro.
I know this Verrazano one because I actually
did you know that?
It.
Metal Gear Solid 2.
Oh, nice.
The Edward Koch Bridge, because that connects to
Ed
Astoria.
Koch. Yeah.
Oh.
And Ed Koch
was
the mayor.
I actually walked that last summer.
Did you?
It was a nice walk. Yeah, because they have like a kind of little pedestrian thing.
Oh,
like,
is that walkway traveling? Yeah.
Is that the one with the two arches? Is that that one?
It's a good podcast.
I can't remember because I was on it. So.
Oh, yeah, true. Okay.
I don't think so because that doesn't ring a bell. But I mean, it was kind of cool because you're walking and they're all like these cars, like so many cars just zooming like
past,
just,
yeah, fair. But yeah, no, like it is, like it's very by the numbers. There's nothing about it that I was immediately shook by or anything. I just think it was a very well constructed film. Like Brian Kirk, like he's a director, he's a TV director, so he does everything kind of very laterally, very by the numbers, very much you can connect all the dots to it. And it's done stylishly, but not so much that it's overbearing.
Yeah.
And the performances were all very good. Like, I mean, Sienna Miller was great in it. Chadwick Boseman was great in it. Keith David is in it. He's really good in it. Stephen James and Taylor Kitsch, both very good in it. It was exactly the kind of like mid-level crime movie that you don't really see done that much anymore. And when it is done, it's done quite badly. And the example I would give of that is The Informant with Clive Owen earlier this year, Rosamund Pike, which was pants. This is grand. This is grand. This is like 3.5 out of 5, like.
Yeah.
It's worth a watch. Like, if you saw it on telly, you'd probably enjoy it. If you were at a loose end and like on a Wednesday and you went into a cinema and saw it, great. It's that kind of film.
I love hearing reviews like that where I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. 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 Like, you could.
If you're walking past a cinema, you might be like, ooh.
Yeah. If you have like 2.5 hours to kill and you're just like, oh, yeah, fuck it.
Tuesday or Wednesday when they have like, you know, in certain cinemas, they have like your reduced ticket.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
One two for one, one deal night.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, one of those two for. It's
get your popcorn included.
Totally. That's it. It is a 2-for-1 film. Like, it's one of those ones where it's like, you can go in and like, I didn't pay a huge amount of money for this. This is fine. I can just appreciate this for what it is and then get up and leave. You don't need to rush to see it. Like, it's not like, oh my God, it's the best film.
And who is the acting quite good? Like,
yeah, they're all very good.
It
like
an ensemble cast?
It is very much an ensemble cast. I mean, Chadwick Boseman, like I said, like, he is trying his damnedest to make himself the kind of the guy in
And
this.
Could you actually see him continuing, transitioning away from hero movies and so on?
I don't know. He's very one note as an actor, I think. I think he's always kind of like very serious and very like...
Which works for the Black Panther character, correct, in fairness, because that's the whole point of him, is that he is kind of, you know, very serious and sincere, you know, in kind of his objectives and everything.
Correct. And it's the same in this as well. Like, he's this straight-laced super cop kind of thing. Like, so like, he almost is a superhero in some regard.
Okay, yeah.
Like, so again, like, it's him very much written for him about his kind of... It's within his wheelhouse.
You might actually be more excited for Denzel's actual son in Tenet.
Yeah, totally. Like, that's it. Like, I think it's the kind of thing of like, I think if this was in the hands of a different actor, it would have been a completely different role,
really,
performance done with it. But I think the fact that he was put into it, I think it was written for him.
It's a bit mainstream or something. Or...
Not even mainstream. It's just, it's very like, it's playing to his strengths, I would say.
Yeah.
There you are. It's playing to his strengths.
3.5 stars.
3.5 out of 5.
Still going to watch it on TV.
Yeah.
You haven't convinced me.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
And I only have so much time and I go to the movies a lot.
Exactly. Yeah, like if I didn't have to see this for work, I'd probably wait until I saw this on TV. And even then I'd be like, yeah, I'll watch it.
Pretty good. Like,
yeah, fine. Pretty good. It's fine.
How do the bridges come across?
Very well. Very structurally.
I actually gave a quick Google. So Pittsburgh, famously the city of bridges.
Yeah. Did you find out the arches one?
No, but can you guess how many bridges there are in Pittsburgh?
I'm going to say 50.
50? Close.
Oh, I have no idea. I wouldn't even guess.
The Wikipedia article says Pittsburgh city area, 446 bridges.
Holy shit! That is a lot of bridges.
It's too many bridges.
That's too many bridges. That's... No, I mean, like, that's it. Like,
it's cement over the river.
Yeah, like, but not even that. Like, you're kind of like, how do we make a film out of that? 451 bridges.
That has a good ring to it.
You think?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're like, why are there so many? Like we just asked there.
Mm. Yeah.
There
fair.
You go.
Okay, I'm writing that down beside the, what was it,
Cheap skink.
Skink.
You've also got your movie recommendation fair and your general movie notes.
Dangerous Days, the Blade Runner documentary.
Yeah.
Cheap skink.
The you liked thing. Your behind the scenes docs because you were talking about the Shining one the other week as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Hearts of Darkness.
I haven't seen that, which is
you
so
would
bad.
Love it. It's really good.
Yeah, because whatchamacallit, like Apocalypse Now, it did blow me away. You know those movies, like obviously they're so built up. And I was like, this absolutely satisfies the build up.
Yeah.
This is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Hearts of Darkness is really, really good. Have you seen it?
No, is this the kind of behind the scenes of
the one
Apocalypse
where it's
Now?
Yeah, of Apocalypse Now where like freaking
you hear about how cheeky Brando was showing up late and stuff.
Oh yeah, like he was such a shit. He was such a shit of a person. Like he turned up, didn't know his lines, was overweight, shaved his head, and like Coppola's like, we're so fucking over budget. I'm so fucking stressed. Okay, grand. Let's just go with it. Like, and then he had to shoot
film it in the dark.
Film it in the dark so you didn't see any of them. And then whenever you did see him, it was only just done
the
in
face,
half. Like,
yeah,
just
yeah.
the face.
Ridiculous.
And like,
it was a stylistic choice.
Yeah, it's a total thing. Like, yeah, if you'd never seen Hearts of Darkness, you'd be like, that's so clever how he did that. Like, he's this.
Yeah, it does work. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, oh, he's this disconnected person. No, this was Francis Ford Coppola panicking at the fucking
he's
last
actually
minute.
Sitting on a couch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got like a bag of crisps in the shadows.
In the shadows. Yeah.
I don't like him talking like this. You're neither.
That was good.
That was really good.
Oh, no, I can do a pretty good Marlon Brando.
Keep going. Yeah, give us a line.
You're nothing but a grocery boy sent to collect the bill.
Can you tee up our Frozen 2 review?
Now we're going to hear about Frozen 2.
Oh, wait, are we doing Frozen 2 or Them That Follow or Them That Follow Last?
Let's Them That Follow Last.
Okay.
Unless you have any preference.
No, it
I don't
can
really
follow
know too much
Frozen
about
2.
Ah, pre-segue. I'll have to recall that.
That's a nice pre-segue.
Hey, you know, they should call you Brian Doe.
That's a terrible joke, Dee. That's very bad.
I love my pun.
It's in bad taste.
It's really good.
It's a terrible taste.
Before we get into Frozen 2, you have to tell us, how did you get on as Olaf at the lighthouse? Dressed up, interviewing kids. It's all on Twitter.
I really wish you hadn't brought that up, Owen.
Well, we were talking about it on last week's podcast, so I'm sure all the listeners out there want to know.
I want the post-mortem, yeah.
Okay, right. So this is what did happen.
Can you tell us about the tweets too? Because they were really funny.
So the tweets?
Yeah.
Oh,
like Nam and
oh yeah,
John
the picture.
Parker.
Yeah, yeah. There was a picture of me like interviewing the kids, and I was like, I look like I'm being really serious with them. So I was like, you kids ever hear about Nam?
Is there a housing crisis in this country?
Well, it depends on what you mean by crisis.
And there was the other one. Let me tell you kids about my interview with John Carpenter.
Let me tell you about that time I described Irish parliamentary procedure to John Carpenter, okay? So basically it was about a hung doll, and kids have no idea. But no, what was gas was, right, and this is something that I was not expecting at all. But literally, because like it was all like they took out all cinemas in Lighthouse for Frozen, and
the whole building, yeah,
the whole building. And I like we were walking around filming it for it, right, and they all had the cameras and everything. But literally, if I stood still for like 3 minutes, a small queue of kids would line up to take pictures with me. And the first time it was all like
they were so confused.
They were really confused. The first time it was like, okay, sure, yeah, let's get a picture. And then all the parents would start crowding around. Like, look, can we get a picture with you? And I was all like, yeah, but like I'm not here. Like
I don't work for the Lighthouse.
I don't work for Disney. Yeah, fine. It was like, okay, like take the picture and smile. So like, there's at least 20 pictures out there on the internet, 20 if not more, of me smiling, kind of in a panic with like a group of small children around me. Now, not to get dark, but like
I
have this mustache at the minute.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's quite Magnum PI. I don't think it's too kind of thin, wispy for it to be like.
No, it's a good mustache. It's just combined with the Olaf costume.
Yeah.
It looks a bit sinister. Yeah.
There's no characters design that had Olaf featuring anything like this
at all. But like, I mean, you know, yeah, so it was fine. Just kids are crazy. And
that's
when
good.
They see Olaf, like, I will say it's the only time I've been around children that they're actually like struck, if you know that kind of way. Like,
did they think you were actually like Josh Gad or something?
I don't know.
And then they heard your voice and they were like, oh.
I don't know. Like, they were all like, Olaf! Olaf! And they kept like pulling at like my hand and all that kind of thing because they wanted like pictures and stuff like this. Like,
that implies that you're really disappointed with children's reactions to you as a person.
Yeah, you
today.
As a person, they're just like, they're nothing. But like then when they wear the Olaf costume, it's the joy in their eyes. Like, but there were two kids though that were little shits who kept punching me in because the thing had a big belly on it, like, and like at least two kids like started to punch me, and I was all like, okay, stop, okay, haha.
Were they boys or girls?
They were boys, of course they were boys. And they were slightly older boys.
Yeah, they get cheeky.
Bullied.
Then.
And this was it, and it was all like, okay, kids, stop it now, or I'm gonna hit you. And then I was like, and I just had visions of myself just like beating the shit out of this kid.
All right, we're gonna hit.
Because it was very like, it's that thing of like,
I really hope Disney aren't listening.
I really hope they're not. Maybe they are. I don't know. But like, there was
I know why I asked. I knew it would go this way.
Yeah, because like, there was an element of like,
Am I going to like just see red and just like punch the kid in the face?
I did hear, just to counter that, I did hear though a very kind of sweet story that Brian had finished like taking the pictures and stuff. And then this one little girl kind of wandered up to him and she was real shy and stuff. And Brian was like, do you want a picture too? And she was like, mm-hmm. And he did take the picture. So that was sweet.
Heart of gold.
Secretly. I know, yeah, no, it was all like, it was very nice. Like, I mean, the kids were all great. And the video, I think, is on site now, I think. There's like a Frozen 2 hub on site or something like that. So you can see.
So you can see all your Frozen 2
yeah.
requirements.
Yeah.
Yeah. On entertainment.ie.
That is kind of wholesome.
Yeah, it was very wholesome. It was very, very wholesome.
You did your service.
I did my duty well. And we still have that Olaf costume.
You haven't brought it home.
I'll have to break it out for Christmas and stuff.
Maybe.
You should wear it for the Christmas party.
No, I'm not.
There's going to be kids around. He should wear it.
If there's kids around at if there's kids for this Christmas party, fine, I'll wear it. But like, I'm not wearing it just for the sake of it. Like,
for me.
That could be an Oscars.
An Oscars forfeit. But,
yeah.
You have to work an entire day in the Olaf. Yeah. You have to go to a press screening.
Oh. I take that.
I like the office day thing.
Okay, fine.
Lower stakes, yeah.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
Just have to wear it like, for a weekend or something.
Something. Yeah.
If you like have to wear it to work, D, you're not allowed to explain yourself.
Yes.
Except it'll just look like a maternity costume on me.
With the hood.
With the hood and with the belly. Yeah, that's true.
All right, tell me about Frozen 2.
Yeah.
Well, we've both seen it.
I didn't see it.
Oh,
I didn't see it.
That's the best bit.
I worked at it. And then they were like, do you want to go in and see it? I was like, nah, I'm good.
I thought it was you weren't allowed in.
No. Well, like, yeah, they were so like tight on seats, like that. Sure. they were like, well, you can stand at the back. I was like, I'm not standing up for 2 hours.
Not in an Olaf costume.
It was very warm.
In fairness, if you'd been in that screen, I'd say you would have had kids pestering you during it. True. So I'd say you made the right decision.
Yeah, you would have distracted them from the film.
That's what I'm telling myself. But yeah, I didn't see it, so, but like, it looked good.
I really liked it. So I liked this even more than the first Frozen. Honestly, the first Frozen, I wasn't that even blown away by. I am in the camp of Tangled is better than Frozen.
Wow. I do love
which
Tangled.
Which does have a following on Twitter. So
I
there you go.
Love Tangled.
It's a great movie.
And I love it.
It is better than Frozen.
I love it for the horse.
Oh, well, I love it for everything. I love Flynn. I prefer the songs in it. The animation is stunning. Still, I think it's still the most expensive animated movie ever made.
No
yeah,
way.
Yeah. I think it was The Hair. The Hair was incredibly expensive to animate.
Right.
There you go.
And give us a bit of backstory into the phenomenon that is the first Frozen film.
I don't know if people need it because they all
everyone's
know it. Everyone's indulged in the phenomenon. Not even like children, but I think that what was nice about this film was you got a lot of like kind of sisters bonding over it. So just the number of YouTube videos that were the girls singing, do you want to build a snowman?
Yeah.
I almost called it the wrong thing. I would have had so many Frozen
people. Let It Go song was big.
Let It Go was a biggie. If you liked Let It Go, in this one, Idina Menzel, a.k.a. Elsa, has not one but two showstoppers in this.
Okay, big tracks.
Yeah.
What did John Travolta call her? I can't remember.
Oh, Adele Dazeem.
Dazeem.
That's like not even close.
Not even.
There's.
I'm just going to go up and wing it.
Like, what I look at is like, they have auto cue with that thing. Did he not have his glasses on or something?
Liam Broyd.
Like,
I get the whole. I get the whole.
And
I get the whole
Ron
Yun. Like, I get the Adele, because, like, you know, she's also a singer, but Dazeem?
Adele
like,
Dazeem.
Idina Menzel. Maybe that melded into Dazeem, and he was like, just fuck it.
Why didn't he wear glasses? Like, I mean, was he that, like,
it's a real theme. Sure, look at the La La Land.
La La Land, yeah.
Controversy.
Did that happen that year, did it?
That would have been.
That was the year after,
year,
I think.
Was it?
Yeah. Like, no.
Oh, well, La La Land, I feel like, was the year after. Because Frozen was, what, 2013 or 2014?
Actually, you could be right.
Yeah, because this is, I remember looking it up and it's 6 years after. So it would have been 2013, yeah. The animation in this is absolutely stunning. Like, it's so vibrant. There's this scene, people have probably seen it in the trailer, where Elsa is trying to get beyond this like huge sea, and there are all these waves and stuff, and the texture of the water is just gorgeous. Yeah. Like even the leaves in the forest, like it's like you could jump in and like play around with them and stuff. And like the kind of breadth of the emotion on the characters' faces, I think also shows just how far animation has come. Because you can see it in, say, the Toy Story movies, you know, that with each movie, like that's part of the reason. Exactly. The faces get better, and as a result, like the emotion just becomes like more and more kind of harrowing and stuff.
I still
and
easier to communicate.
Yeah,
Moana.
Exactly.
Seeing Moana for the first time and seeing the water and just being like, oh my God, they've done it.
Yeah.
That's done now.
Yeah, and like considering how
and
kind
that's
of
old now. Like.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Like how much it's like moved on from it. Like, and also as well, the fact that like water is such a big theme in Moana, like, and how they had to, they just had to get it right. Like,
yeah.
You know?
So what is this pushing the world of ice?
Yeah,
to new level ice tech.
I guess you could say that.
I'm gonna invest. Well, I can't actually.
I will say it looked more kind of like an adventure-y kind of thing.
It is more that. Yeah, yeah, and there's more kind of magic in it and stuff. Actually, just speaking of the adventure, that was probably the one weakness to it was the plot. Basically, there's this whole mystery surrounding like Elsa's origins.
Okay.
And there's some kind of link to this magical forest, and her parents kind of become like characters and related to this whole mystery as well. And the payoff, which is like when you kind of discover the truth, it's not great. It was like so much build up, and it's like, really? That's what you're leading to.
It's like Rey's lineage in The Last Jedi.
A bit like that. Yeah, yeah. Just somewhat disappointing.
I hope it's the exact same where they
It's not the exact same.
By the way, it doesn't matter.
Although apparently that's coming back up again in the next Star Wars.
Well, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, I'm giddy. No, tell me more about Frozen 2, though.
Yeah, there, Olaf. Too. Olaf is funnier than ever. Not Brian, actual Olaf.
Just Gad.
Very oafish and just like has these like great kind of one-liners and stuff like that. There's this whole sequence where they're traveling to get to this enchanted forest, and he's like, "Did you know?" Which is exactly like in Shrek 2, donkeys. Are we there yet? To the point where I was like, they totally ripped that off.
Wow.
But there's this bit where. I can't obviously recreate it now, but there's this bit where they meet these like people in the forest. I don't want to give it away and stuff, but he explains like what has led them up to this, and he basically summarizes and kind of pantomimes the first Frozen. The entire film. And it's so funny. It's so well done. Like I was genuinely laughing out loud in the cinema, which as we've discussed before, is always awkward at a press screening because you've got just a few people kind of scattered throughout the cinema. Yeah. So I'm just like sitting there laughing by
myself. Do you guys feel pressure?
Anyway,
pressure when surrounded by other critics at a screening where like if you're
not
laughing
laugh.
You're like I'm above it
it's not kind of the pressure, but I always find comedies are much
drier
when you watch them at a press screening as opposed to with an audience,
because
you know
nobody
what I
wants
mean?
To be the loud one, or
no
because...
it's just like laughter is infectious, like you know,
yeah,
that kind
exactly.
of way, like, and there always is that element of like, you know, I
it's just attendance numbers kind of.
Yeah, well, not even that. But like, I think it's the thing of like, you know,
people find different things funny. So when you hear some people laughing, you might laugh along or you might start laughing.
Yeah.
You
and plus as well, like, I mean, you're seeing a comedy at like 10:30 in the morning. Like,
yeah. That
ready?
Too. Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
ready to laugh at that hour of, the hour of the day? Like, you know, that kind of way.
Not until I've had my bloody coffee.
But not even have a damn cup of coffee. Not even that. Like, it's just it is. I genuinely like. I think more often than not now, we find it that studios will actually put comedies on in the evening and bring everybody in. And then they'll have...
Then that's your review. Yeah.
That's the press screen. And then like, because that's how you're supposed to experience comedies. Like you're supposed to experience it with
that's
a crowd.
That's a really good
like,
yeah,
shape,
exactly.
And that's fair. And I would be like, okay, that I get like, you know, that kind of way. But like, yeah. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. So other things about this, you get the sisterly love again, which is lovely. And the male characters, Kristoff as well, they're all a hoot. They're good fun. So it basically gives you everything you want. It gives you more songs, gives you more emotion, kind of character, a bit of character development. So yeah, just generally really enjoyed it. Probably the best animated feature of the year.
Wow.
Wouldn't
That's
be surprised.
Praise.
Well, we have discussed this before. It hasn't
it's
been,
not
a
been a great year
for animation.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that kind of somewhat disappointedly because love animation. Yeah, I'm big into animation. Actually recently saw, which I definitely put up there, I would not be surprised if this got a nomination for Best Animation, but there's actually this French animated feature coming out on Netflix called I Lost My Body, which is also excellent. I really recommend for people to check out. Now, it is...
Aimed at young people as well.
No, it's not. It's kind of a... You know how there are some like...
Art house.
Yeah. It's not quite art house, but... It's almost art house. It's basically, so you follow this guy, right, kind of through his life, and he's had like these traumas and stuff, and he's trying to kind of make human connections, and he eventually meets this girl. But at the same time, you have this, and this is going to sound like I'm describing the Addams family's thing, but that's exactly what it is.
Hand.
It's this severed hand that's like wandering around the city trying to find its body, which hence the title, I Lost My Body.
Oh.
J'ai perdu mon corps, as they'd say in French. Sorry if that was terrible. I haven't learned French in several years.
No, it was good.
That's great as well. But generally as a sequel, very satisfactory. So I was happy. And like I said, it's just, you get so caught up in like the magic and
the
like the whimsicalness and like I said, the emotion. Like it really is quite heartfelt, and it goes into some dark places and you're like, Elsa Nana, no. So
it's
I really, really liked it.
That's good.
Yeah. Wow. So number two it's better than the original.
I preferred it to the original.
I think I prefer Toy Story 2 to the original.
Yeah, I'm like that as well.
And one's brilliant.
Yeah.
So maybe it's the same again where...
It is that thing though, but I...
Consistently improving.
Yeah, I would say that about like... I think animated films, generally speaking, tend to... It's more acceptable for them to improve with each passing film than a live action film, if you know what I mean.
Do you think a lot of that's down to having the character models and everything already?
I would think so.
The writing improve or whatever?
I would think, I would say it's probably due to the fact that the animation jumps a generation, but also as well, I think, is the fact that like you're kind of fuffing around in the dark for the first one, and by the second one, like, right, okay,
we know
what a character is, you know what they're going to do, you know what way you can put them in and what they're capable of doing, what people will respond to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of why like the second and third ones of animated films will always be better than the first, I think.
That's the thing, like the team working on Frozen, and actually this will make a nice segue into my interview with the Frozen 2 directors.
Oh, wow.
But they absolutely know these characters like through and through. And not only that, but they know exactly what you were saying about what the audience has responded to so positively in the first Frozen. And they basically give you that again and then some.
Yeah.
So they've absolutely got the formula right here as far as sequels go.
What is that then? It's what, sisterly love and...
Sisterly love and music and magic. And I know I keep on saying the emotion, but like I genuinely did find myself kind of taken away by this film and like feeling like really sad and then really elated and really excited. And you know, we've
said
so many.
You go on the whole journey like that.
And I mean,
power of good fantasy like
that. Yeah, it's the power of good cinema, really. I do think that it has its issues, like any sequel tends to.
Okay, yeah.
Like I said, particularly with that plot, it bothered me somewhat. They've definitely left space open for another Frozen.
Well,
so
there will
have
be
to see.
Second of 30 Frozen movies.
Probably.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, although it's not in their in that list I read out.
Oh,
although
really?
it could be an untitled Disney one of those ones, you know.
Film will be released.
I can't imagine they shouldn't do a live action version of it though, I don't think. I really like they need to stop.
Well, they did the Broadway one.
Well, yeah, a Broadway show is different. Like, I'm not saying like a live-action film. Like, they don't need to make a live-action film.
Ah, well, I mean, it's so recent.
It's so recent,
and, I mean,
know, but I'm saying...
is still, like, the animated format is still doing so well
for
them. I don't think they'll think about it for a while, but who knows, like, Disney 2030.
That's what I'm saying. I think
how much merch they're selling. Like, think about it.
Yeah.
But not even... You know, one thing I'd wonder is, could Frozen... So, you know how Frozen for ages was the... top grossing animated movie of all time.
Mm.
And then it was surpassed recently by The Lion King. Could Frozen 2 surpass The Lion King again?
Oh,
I'd be curious, you know?
Because
it's the only one I can see kind of holding a candle to it. Because like the live action Mulan isn't going to do it. It's just not.
You don't think?
You know? And sure, that's not an animation anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Enough,
so I can't actually think of another animation that
also
is doing
presumably
this
big. Release date for Frozen 2 is the plan to just absolutely keep it lit until January.
Yeah,
like people will still be going to see this Christmas week and stuff.
That's the thing. Yeah,
definitely.
Although it will, the only thing is, it will probably face a bit of competition when the next Star Wars comes out.
Mm.
So they're gonna stop around mid December.
Probably they'll get the full month of December out of it. Like,
yeah,
I think though at the same time you have to remember that Frozen 2, and you get this with, like, you know, animated features generally, is they'll go see it again.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that kind of really bring in the box office.
Is that because
it's
the kids want to go back the next weekend?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. So it's not really a matter of everyone going to see it. It's people going to see it multiple times. And it is that kind of movie that it's so kind of pleasant and stuff that you will go to it again. Like Joker, I think, has been doing so well because people are going to it multiple times to kind of, you know, deep dive on it.
I don't think so. I think quite the opposite.
I know a few people. I know a few people who've already seen it twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
because they bring more people.
Yeah,
to it,
that's
and then
what
they
I mean.
Talk to them.
Okay.
About
yeah,
it
yeah that's what's
you know?
Happening. I feel that's what's happening. Yeah, as in, like, people are like, everyone's talking about that film. So they're like, oh shit, I want to go see it. And they're like, oh, here, we'll go. And then, like, I've seen it, but I'll go see, exactly as you say. Let's go see it.
Take someone to it to show it off to them.
To show, and then, like, let's talk about it afterwards. Like, I think that's how Joker has kept going, because it's that thing of, oh God, you got to see this film. Oh, I haven't seen it. Look, we'll go. I'll come with you. I've seen it already, but I'll watch it again. Like, you know?
Also, like, I think you're spot on that it will surpass The Lion King, because even if it's 5 weeks old or something, if someone's walking past the cinema with their family and sees there's
Frozen 2,
absolutely,
they see it up, they'll go for it. Like,
and I don't think there are really going to be any kind of animated kids movies. I don't think so anyway, between now and kind of really early New Year.
Probably on purpose, yeah.
Or at least none that can kind of, you know, take out Frozen 2. I mean, that's a biggie.
Yeah.
And what, did you go four and a half?
I gave it four.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four and a half is a lot.
That's very, very good.
That's very, very good. It would, for me, four and a half would be, there's only like one issue with it, but it would kind of warrant it not getting five stars.
Yeah, of course.
That'd be the way I'd give four and a half stars anyway.
I used to give out four and a half a lot. And then I was like, nah, I need
it's actually
to.
Very good. Yeah.
Because it's that thing of like, what's stopping me from giving it five? Like, I actually counted it the other day. I actually figured out how many 5-star reviews I've given over my entire career.
How many?
20.
Oh, okay.
20. I've given out 20 5-star reviews.
Can you speed list some highlights?
One was Ad Astra, was this year. Another was An Engineer Imagines. Hey!
Go listen to that episode.
An Engineer Imagines, which was this amazing documentary that was out this year. The Farthest I gave 5 stars to, Mission Impossible Fallout, that was 5 stars. what are the other ones?
Back a few years?
Yeah, I'm going back a while now. Like, there was 1 year, I think.
Definitely every John Wick movie.
Yeah, John Wick Chapter 2. Yeah, yeah, John Wick Chapter 2. That was 5-star. Yeah, that was 5-star. Mike's last review was John Wick 3.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and he gave that 5 stars. Yeah. What else? I kind of remember there was other ones that were 5 stars.
Oh,
but
there you have it.
Yeah, there was a small amount of them anyway. There was a small amount of them anyway. So, yeah, there you go.
All right, we're going to tee up Dee's delicious interview.
Yeah, I just realized I teed that up earlier and then we went off topic.
Forget about it. No, but I am very interested in... So, what, you were saying Jennifer Lee is basically the Kathleen Kennedy of this
franchise. She's huge now. She's basically like, I forget, for the
Chief
life
Creative
of me,
Officer.
Yes, thank you for that. But she has another role as well, which is essentially like COO or
that's
something.
That's it, CCO. Yeah.
But there's another title there as well.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, because I remember reading an interview with her and she's that and something else.
But it is kind of a creative lead as opposed to business buy.
Mm, exactly.
Business
so,
buy. Big business
so
buy.
She's a big deal.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed talking to both of them. Like I said, just like speaking to them, hearing their absolute love for Frozen was like really kind of nice and a nice, like, you know, kind of cherry to put on top of the movie experience for me. and I especially liked listen to the end where they talk about the message behind Frozen 2 for younger audiences. It's really sweet. So here it is. So I suppose congratulations on the movie. I like this even more than the first Frozen, if I'm honest with you.
That means a lot. Thank you. Thank you.
I think that what you did really well was that you took your time with it, didn't rush into a sequel. It comes 6 years after the first Frozen and everything. I was wondering, when you have that amount of time, like, what do you dedicate the most, kind of invest the most in? Would it be the story? Would it be the character development, the animation? Which of those would kind of take up the most time, I suppose?
It's always the I think character story. And story together. Mm-hmm. They're always intertwined, and it does. I mean, we were still rewriting all the way to August because they're really hard to crack, and especially if you want them to speak to people of all ages, mm-hmm. you want things to resonate with children but also resonate with adults, so there are layers to every scene. All of that on top of the fact that the music and the story have to almost be married, and that relationship, there's a lot of courting that goes on between songs and scenes. So for us, it really is crafting the story, and we don't want to rush that. I think it was nice to have the extra time compared to the first one, but it also, for us, I think we needed it because it is, we didn't know what we were getting into, and I think it is much harder to do a next chapter. Even though you think you know the characters, I think just not doing, letting the characters go where they need to go and speak to you that way versus having the first one in your head, I think that was a big challenge.
Just picking up on what you were saying about the songs are as catchy as ever, and I think that it's great that, you know, the songwriters Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez are back. How does that kind of working relationship with them work? Because, like, I'd imagine there's a lot of communication for, like, exactly what you want, but then you also obviously have to give them the space to be kind of creative and do their own thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
We work with them every day. Mm-hmm. They're in New York, we're in L.A., so it's video conferencing. Even if it's just a few minutes, but usually it's about an hour or hour and a half, whatever, and we just talk about the story development because mm-hmm. There's so much that changes when we're working on it during the day. Mm-hmm. We have to keep them up to speed. And then there's a lot of ideas that they're bringing. So there's so much of that. There's so much that's happening there. And, you know, we really are kind of one brain together. And I know that Jen works so closely with them, too. It's funny how I always love the idea. They admitted it, like, early in the first movie. They said, you know, we're going to take your best scenes that you've written and we're going to make them songs. And we're going to make them ours. Just like, okay.
They always make it much better than anything I could do.
But it's so. it's always those scenes that are the most emotional or there's some, or even the funniest or whatever it is, because they like the heightened kind of moments that just need to be sung. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys draw from, like, kind of folklore and mythology, you know, similar to the first film for the story in this one?
Yeah, even more so. We when we were traveling to Norway, Iceland, and Finland, we really saw the forests were like enchanted forests from all the folk tales from Scandinavia. And we could see Anna there as that ordinary hero, the fairy tale character, non-magical in a magical world. And Elsa, the Old Norse myths of Iceland, which, you know, were rooted also in Scandinavia, but went older and deeper into the mythic realm of the mythic character is magical, carries the burdens of the world, often has a tragic fate, but it's so much aligned with Elsa, and realized we had, in Frozen 1 even, two stories running parallel, and the wrestle of the myth and the fairy tale in this second film, it really helped us drive to see just how far we could go.
I suppose my very last question for you guys is, the message of the first Frozen is, you know, to let it go. And I know you've spoken before, Jennifer, about how empowering that's been for young people if they're struggling in school, if they're struggling mm-hmm. with anxiety. What do you think is the message that young audiences will take away from Frozen 2?
Ooh.
Well, one of the things we talk about is sort of the power of perseverance.
Yeah.
That, you know, we see our characters really challenged in this one, and they do persevere. And, you know, where they end up. In the end, I think, is a very, very strong place. And so the challenge of that, and then how you can come out much stronger in the end.
Mm-hmm. And the same for you, Jennifer?
Yeah, I think you said it well. I think coping with change is a big thing. And stepping into the unknown, those are scary things in life. But where Frozen 1 was a more looking at relief, acceptance, Frozen 2 really dares you to act and participate in the world. And so I like that, you know, one's an acceptance, but one is an action.
No.
Oh, no.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I haven't heard it yet.
I'm going to preempt it by going, oh,
I liked what she said about, you know,
that thing.
Oh, Frozen, yeah. Too.
That was so clever.
Okay.
Everyone was just kind of like,
I need to start listening to the interviews before we get in, because I always just come out and go, ah,
that was great.
But I presume.
Mm. It is good.
Them That Follow. Yeah. Yeah, the next one. And I have many questions about this.
Okay, yeah. So this is our last kind of movie review. There are other movies.
I totally took that off you, by the way. I'm sorry.
That was a great segue.
That wasn't even a attempt.
I liked it.
Sorry. It's nice to hear it.
Yeah, there are other movies out this week. Like there's Blue Story, PJ Harvey and A Dog Called Money. But basically we don't have time to cover them all because we end up kind of shiting on. So
people had to pick between movie reviews and...
Shy talk.
CGI ice tech investment. I am going to get on that.
Like we were just literally talking about, you know, we got to make this show a bit quicker and a bit more kind of like, then you're just like CGI water ice tech.
Can you remember how many bridges there are in Pittsburgh?
451?
Yeah. That's exactly it.
And there are 21 bridges in and out of Manhattan.
Can you list them up?
No, I can't. But there's only one bridge to the review for Them That Follow. Deirdre!
Nice! Can we officially share segue duties? Because that'll...
Yeah, we
that'll
can take, share, that'll we take can the share heat segue off you, duties. Yeah. Do I get to use puns for them?
Only if we can slag them after.
Yeah, that's fine.
But did you have one lined up?
No. Well, I can't line on up my fly, own like, review.
Them that follow you across the frozen bridge to this review.
Yeah, or I'm going to follow my Frozen 2 interview with Them That Follow.
Oh. I'll stick to the segues.
Yeah, maybe you take the segue.
Brian, give me your line again.
I'll take this. Thanks. Yeah, go for it, please.
And from that interview to them that this is now following it... The review of Them That Follows D. Take it away.
So, Brian, you said you had questions.
I did.
Will I briefly explain what this movie is about
please
first?
Do.
And then we'll hear your questions. So this stars Olivia Colman. She headlines it, actually, in spite of only really being a supporting character in this. I assume
her
it's
name
because,
is all over the trailer.
Yeah. And I mean, it's being released like a week after The Crown. Which you always wonder, are they kind of timing it on purpose?
She's an Academy Award winner.
And she's an Academy Award winner. I'd assume it's kind of off the back of that, mostly in fairness, that she got top billing for this.
It's so strange to even see her do an accent. Like, what state is it?
It is called, I'll tell
it's
you.
It's like they're West Virginia or something.
I can't even fucking pronounce this. Appalachia.
Appalachians.
Yeah.
High in the mountains.
That one.
The Appalachian Mountains.
In the forests.
Yeah.
Would be West Virginia.
Which are dense and secretive and where.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it about, like, I'm not 100. Is it about Amish people, is it?
They're not quite Amish. Like, they basically have this weird kind of.
Say cult.
It's quite cult-like. Like
is it Mennonites?
I don't know because I don't know the different religions. I just know that they believe in Jesus, but they also worship snakes. So I'll get into that.
There's
a word for it.
There's a word for them. The snake handlers.
Yeah. Okay.
The snake handlers.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I do actually hear that term.
Yeah, it's worth investing in.
Snake handlers are basically like, it's...
So the whole idea is that these snakes will sense and test your faith.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the whole idea of it.
And it'll bite you if you're a bold boy.
Yeah, and that kind of happens. Right. It creates drama and stuff like this. But essentially, your lead character in this is called Mara. She is the daughter of the pastor, who is played by Walton Goggins, who is just He is loving playing like a crazy devout pastor and like getting everyone jumping up and down and singing and dancing around the room.
Where did
snakes.
I recognize him from?
Oh, Justified. And he was in Django Unchained.
He's in
he's the racist.
Yeah, he was like, oh, you are one lucky.
He reminded me of the guy from Far Cry.
Yeah.
It's the exact same kind of Baptist minister.
Yeah, Baptist minister. And he was in, what else was he in? He was in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely know his face.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
Yeah, you absolutely know this guy. Oh, he was in The Hateful Eight.
Oh, that's exactly, that's yeah. the main one I was thinking
he was
of.
The, he was the guy who survives with Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes.
Yeah, him, yeah.
Spoiler much.
What?
Anyway. yeah, so her father wants to set her up with this guy called Garrett, who's played by Lewis Pullman, because he thinks that he's a good suitor. But he doesn't realize that Mara has actually already had a love affair with this non-believer named Augie, and now she is pregnant. So she's keeping this a secret from the whole community. But eventually, Olivia Colman's character, Hope, who is actually the mother of the guy she had an affair with, she finds out. But even her best friend, Dilly, who's played by Caitlin Dever, who's having a phenomenal year between Booksmart, and then she was also in that Netflix series Unbelievable, and she was great in that too. So that's basically what you have story-wise, and her kind of keeping this pregnancy a secret while she's being courted by this other guy. And then she's like kind of keeping, you know, her love for the guy she had an affair with kind of suppressed or whatever. So it's a weird one because it's like you can probably, like, even from that description alone, I'd say you could kind of map out where this movie goes. And that is exactly what I got watching this. I was like, if I'd watched like the first kind of 10, 15 minutes of the film,
you could tell where it's going
to
end up.
Yeah, exactly. And I was required to kind of write down what was next. I probably would have gotten most of it right.
Yes.
It's that kind of, you know, predictable. And then the finale is like kind of open-ended, which annoyed me. It's generally entertaining.
Okay, yeah.
But I think the main thing it has going for it is the cast, because, I mean, they're just unbelievable in this. Like I said, Caitlin Dever, because she's an unbelievable. And I mean, Olivia Colman, she has a small enough role, but when she is in the film, whether it's like kind of giving Mara life advice, or in the end she becomes like in turmoil because she's kind of forced to choose between her faith and her son. I won't get into exactly how, but like she is absolutely like
there's
crying just
involved,
her
aren't
there? There are snakes involved. Yeah. But she is brilliant, and like I said, Walton Goggins as well, great in this. The lead, Alice Englert, she would be known for Ginger and Rose. She was also in Beautiful Creatures, and she's absolutely great in this. I feel kind of bad that she isn't like, she gets like quite low on the billing in spite of being the main kind of character,
yeah,
I suppose.
She's
because
not drawing anyone.
Yeah, because you have Olivia Colman and you have Walton Goggins, and like I said, Caitlin Dever as well. So I did feel kind of bad for her because I was like, but she is the lead.
It's full of strong performances. Like,
that's the thing. And I mean, like, there are, like, you get some attempts at symbolism. Like, at the start of the film, Mara is speaking about how the snakes stay in mass and crawl over one another to stay warm to survive. And I'm like, oh my God, it's just like the community. But generally speaking, it's just kind of fine. I mean, it's basically the feature debut from this writer-director team called Britt Poulton and Dan Madison Savage. And they previously worked on a short together, which, funnily enough, also has a reptilian name to it, Lizard King.
Wow.
So they like their snakes and lizards and reptiles and general amphibians,
I like
suppose.
This voice.
But, like, it's grand. I mean, I read in a review for this, which absolutely describes the performances in it. And it's in one word, and it's committed. So no matter how kind of, like I said, by the numbers and like even like kind of silly or unbelievable the film becomes, because the standard of acting is so good in it, they absolutely pull it off.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
So that is the main thing I'll say for it. I don't think it's doing particularly well. Like, it was, I'm pretty sure it's already done its round in the States. Like, I've seen kind of ratings for it online. I think on IMDb it has something like 5 stars, which is very down the line. I gave it 3 stars. My review's on site on entertainment.ie.
Better than middling.
Yeah, it's kind of middling. Like, it's like I liked it, you know, but there wasn't anything particularly exceptional about it. Nothing that I could be like, oh yeah, you should really check it out.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's just grand.
Yeah, because I was thinking, because that was what I was going to ask, was that, like, is it worth, like, I would watch Olivia Colman reading the phone book if I could.
Well, that's the thing. She is that good in it.
That's what I'm saying. You know? Is it worth turning up for
it's
her?
It's Sophie, like, from Peep Show. Yeah. I can't get over it. That
it's
like
mad.
It's the same
watch
person.
A Mitchell and Webb think about it. It's just like, oh, there's.
I have to go see. Actually, because I've heard such good things about it. Tyrannosaur is meant to be brilliant.
Oh my god, Patty Considine's movie.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
she's meant to be really good in it.
It's amazing. You've really seen it? Yeah. Dark. Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the few times I'm at the lead of having seen it, but
it's very like you can watch it once and that's enough.
Yeah. What's his name? The lead.
Peter
Mullen.
Yes.
Peter Mullen.
Mm. Yeah.
There's a bit where he's sitting on his own in a pub staring in the middle distance and in like choppy audio off to the side, you can just hear, "Are you all right, Peter?" And it's Paddy Considine. The take had been going on for so long that he's worried about him and they left it in.
That's mad.
He's just, it's miserable.
Yeah.
It's really intense. But fair play to Considine as well. He knocked it out of the park. First film.
Completely. Like, and I think it's one of those films that I think is so honest and so visceral and so, like, it really affects you.
Mm.
There's like an assault in it and stuff. Yeah, it's really like trigger warning.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Like it's not for the squeamish. And I don't mean that since it's gory. It's just that it's very like.
It's kind of like I, Daniel Blake, turn up to.
To 1,000.
No hope. Mm.
Yeah. It's rough. But I mean, worth seeing, definitely. Mm. Absolutely worth seeing. So.
But you said you had some questions about them that follow. So
yeah, is it set in our time? Is it set in our time, or is it
contemporary? But I mean, the whole point about the community is that they're kind of shut off. Yeah, they're kind of backward, a bit traditional. Like the girls all wear these kind of thick woolly jumpers and like long skirts. You know, not showing any skin. Yeah. You've got the men kind of going out hunting and stuff like this. Like really, I suppose the main kind of USP for this, I suppose, and you see it like really kind of pushed in the trailer and in the posters and stuff like that is the snakes. You got snakes in this, which makes it
fair enough.
There's a snake in my boot.
There could be a snake in those boots you're wearing.
And I mean, the snakes are done well. And certainly, if you have a fear of snakes, you should not watch this movie.
Better than Snakes on a Plane for snake
related content.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, I mean, I really like Snakes on a Plane because it's so like bad, it's good.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very enjoyable. But I mean, they certainly look more realistic in this movie than in Snakes
on a
Plane.
There's a kind of Deliverance vibe off this as well. I don't know. Yeah, I got the Appalachian.
A bit of that, but like not as like strong or forceful or something.
Not as much as
you know
you'd
what I mean. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's much more like Deliverance, I think, is a horror, whereas this is like thriller, really.
Okay. Mm.
Drama thriller.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There you have it. 3 stars.
Yeah. It's Grant.
That's the film show. It's a good podcast.
It's a great podcast. Don't forget to check out Cheap Skink.
Yeah, I'd love to know what the viewers think. Should I invest in Cheap Skink or CGI ice tech? I'll stick to the ink.
I think it's,
skin-colored ink.
Skin-colored ink, like.
Cheap.
That's a winner.
Undercut the laser market.
You know what you could do as well? You just make up makeup. That you apply.
Oh no, it's already been done.
Oh no.
People are doing it in powder form.
Yeah.
Okay, do that.
Do that then. There's your cheap skink.
Brian, what interview do we have to look forward to on next week's podcast?
Great segue.
Well, Edward Norton.
That's a biggie.
That's a biggie.
Ed. Have you met him yet?
No.
Is this in the future?
No, this is in the future. Edward Norton, it's for his film Motherless Brooklyn.
Which we'll also be reviewing.
Which we'll be reviewing next week. I enjoyed it a lot.
Great.
It's quite good.
Wow.
It's good. It's quite good. It's very noir-y.
Don't tell us yet.
I won't tell you all about it. But we will have a lovely big interview with Edward Norton and Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who is his co-starring. We're going to be talking to them.
I love her.
Yeah.
I just remembered her.
From what?
Like, she's the one in Bell and stuff, right? I love her.
Yeah. And she was in Doctor Who, I think, as well, or something. Right. She's really well known. Yeah. She's a great actor, anyway. So we're going to be talking to the two of them, and they will be on next week's show, and we will have reviews of Motherless Brooklyn and.
We got Two Popes.
The Two Popes. And I think Knives Out as well.
Yes, Knives Out.
I think you're getting to that.
Yeah, there's a screening for that on Monday.
Yeah.
You might even get to Charlie's Angels.
Oh, yeah.
Charlie's Angels, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm seeing that on Monday. And I've seen The Two Popes already. And I'm looking forward to talking about that one. Was pleasantly surprised, had its issues, but I'll delve into that next week.
Slag it off.
No.
I'm going to slag it off because I haven't seen it. And it makes it very easy to slag things. Don't bother with Frozen 2, folks.
It's a load of pants. No, it isn't. It's great. I don't know. No, I haven't seen it.
I have no insight.
I quite liked it.
Yeah. It's, like I said, a standout this week, I think.
I'm really curious about how it does at the box office. I mean, it's going to do well, but I'm just wondering how well.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. Well, we'll give an update next week. Part of the news.
Yeah.
Millions. And thanks for joining us. This has been The Film Show. Yeah.